Well, right now we're in a series called Guardrails, and we're wrapping this whole thing up today. And for a lot of you, this is the first week that you've been to this series, and so I want to kind of give you a little bit of a background of what we're talking about as we wrap this thing up. And we've been using throughout the last 5 weeks this picture of a guardrail to signify or to symbolize something that we can begin to do or something that we can begin to build into our lives spiritually. And for most of us, we know what a guardrail is, right? I'll read you the definition just to kind of give you a reminder. A system designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. Most of us know what a guardrail is. Most of us have seen guardrails. We're familiar with what they're all about. And throughout this series, we've been talking about a couple things in particular about guardrails. One of the things is that a guardrail is actually built in an area of the road where you can drive, but it's built in order to keep you from the area where you can't drive. Right? It's not actually built in the dangerous area. It's built in the safe area. The idea being that if I can cause a small accident here before I get to the edge of the cliff, it's going to eliminate a larger accident. And we've been looking at this physical picture of a guardrail, and we've been asking this question over the past few weeks: what would it look like if we began to take this idea of a guardrail and we began to build this into all sorts of different areas of our life? And so throughout the past few weeks, we've been talking about all sorts of different areas of our lives, and we've been talking about friendship, and we talked about sexual intimacy and finances and all these different areas of our life where we know that, you know what, there is probably danger somewhere in this area of my life if I'm not careful, but I don't necessarily know, okay, where do I put the guardrail? Where do I need to draw the line? And so throughout the series, we've been talking about all these great guardrails that we can begin to put in place. And we kind of redefined this idea of guardrail specifically for this conversation. And we went with something a little bit different, a personal standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. And so we said, how can we begin to build these personal standards of behavior into our lives in such a way that when we begin to run up against these, we begin to feel guilty before we're actually in danger? Right? My conscience begins to, the red flags begin to go off in my conscience before I actually get to danger in order to keep me safe. And as we began the series, we talked through this principle and talked through how God wants us to make the most of every single day and to live not as unwise but as wise. And so we began to look at, okay, how do I begin to build these guardrails in my life? And we've talked through this, and it's been really cool because a lot of you have taken this and you've begun to run with it, and you're not just putting them into your life and the areas that we've been talking about, but you're finding new areas of your life where, like, you know, I need guardrails in this area. I need to begin to establish some personal standards of behavior in this area of my life as well. And so you've been emailing me, and it's been really cool because it's beginning to change some of your lives. And you're beginning to realize, wow, this is going to make a long-lasting impact on my life. This is going to be something that I'm going to be able to remember back to for years and years. This is something that's going to definitely change the outcome of my life. And some of you have been on that track. And then I'm sure, and surprisingly, I haven't had a lot of pushback on this idea of guardrails. I expected to be a little bit more pushback than what I've actually received. But for some of you, you've been in here every week. And as we've been talking through this, you've been saying, man, that is a great idea. I hope that my wife, like, picks up the podcast the last 3 weeks and memorizes them. And for some of you, you're walking through it, you're like, man, I wish my friend could be here to hear this. Or you're walking through it, you're like, man, I wish that my kids could hear this. And there's all sorts of people that you hope hear this. But in your life, as you look at your life, you're like, you know what? I don't necessarily need this. And I hope that they put this into practice. But I think I'm okay. Because for all of us, the temptation is, okay, how close to the edge of the cliff can I get? And for most of us, when we think of this idea of guardrails, we think of restrictions, and we're like, man, I'm not experiencing everything that I could experience in life because, like, I'm having to walk life here, and there's, like, a whole other foot that I could be experiencing. And for some of you, as you walk through this idea of guardrails, you're like, man, that's just robbing me of experiencing everything in life. And the interesting thing about this is that for those of you who are college students who are coming back, like everyone has told you in your life, like make the most of every second of college. And so for some of you, this idea of guardrails, you're like, man, that's keeping me from making the most of every second. Because I could be experiencing that. It's the equivalent of driving down the road and you're driving down the highway and the guardrail's there, but you see that it's like paved for like 3 or 4 feet beyond the guardrail. You're like, I don't understand that. That's drivable area. And literally, that's what we're doing in our lives. We're like, I don't understand. Like, I can definitely live here. I could definitely live like this, and there's nothing wrong with this. That's the tricky thing about guardrails, because you establish the guardrail actually before you get to what's wrong, right? Before you get to what's dangerous, before you get to what's going to cause destruction. And for some of you, you're like, man, this is just kind of limiting. And what I want to do today is I want to kind of give you a foundation from which to be able to have that argument with yourself, whether you're having that argument today or whether you're having that argument 6 months down the road. Because here's one of the things that I guarantee you. I guarantee you, no matter how you're experiencing this series, no matter how much you're loving this series, no matter how much you're loving the things that we're going to talk through, at some point in your life, you're going to look at the guardrails that you've put in place and you're going to say, wow, that's restricting. You're going to look at those guardrails and you're going to say, man, I don't know if I really need that anymore. And one of the lies that we fall into that I guarantee is going to pop up in your head, it's a lie that we believe over and over and over again, is that, you know what, I've matured a little bit, so I could probably move the guardrail over. I'm a couple years older, so I think I could probably move the guardrail over. And it's the first step towards destruction. And what I want to do today is I want to tell you two things that you already know about this process. And then I want to tell you a story. The first of these things is this, and I want to read it to you so I make sure that I don't get this wrong. The first one is this, and if you have your notes, inside your program there's a little notes card. Just take that out. There's a pen there that you can jot these down, because I want you to write these down. The first thing is this, things you already know. Number one, regardless of whether or not you have guardrails, the tension that you feel will not go away. You see, what's going to happen is you're going to get down the road and you're going to run into this guardrail. And one of the things that we talked about, and this was one of the crazy guardrails, and some of you are like, man, that guy is just off his rocker, right? Because for those of you who are married, I threw out this guardrail and like I said, these are personal. These aren't for everybody. I'm not telling you that this is what you have to do. I was just giving you some guidelines and some things to kind of work off of. And one of the things that I threw out for the married couples was, listen, don't go to dinner with someone from the opposite sex when you're married. Don't do it. And for some of you, you're like, man, that's there's nothing wrong with that. And for some of you, you looked at me, especially after we walked through that set of guardrails, and you're like, you know, like he's telling me to establish these guardrails back here, but the truth is, like, I could probably build the guardrail like half the distance away from the edge from where he sat. Right? Here's the thing that I want you to understand with guardrails. And for some of you, you're going to run up against it. And you're going to be somewhere, you're going to be in a situation where all of a sudden there's an opportunity, you're going to go out to dinner, and it's just going to be you and her, and your wife even knows about it, everybody knows about it, and you're like, okay, I'm not going to go out to dinner with this person. And you're going to run up against this guardrail, and you're going to be like, man, this is unnecessary. And you'd be like, I don't know about it. I don't know about this. And if you've built this into your life, all of a sudden, like, you're going to start to feel guilty. All these red flags are going to start to go off. And you're going to be there in that situation. And you're going to be like, man, I really want to do this. I really want to do this. And you're going to break through that guardrail. Guess what's happened? You've had dinner with someone. That's it. That's all that's happened. But here's the deal. It doesn't matter where you build the guardrail. There's always going to be tension. Doesn't matter where you build it, there's always going to be tension. The question is the tension going to be at going to dinner, Or is the tension going to be after dinner where you say, you know what, I'm not going to go. There's no way. She wants me to go upstairs, or she wants me to come inside. I'm not going to go inside. I'm not going to go inside. That's where I draw the line. And it doesn't matter where you draw the line. There's always going to be tension. And the tension's not going to change. It's not like, well, this one's really, really hard, and so this one's probably going to be easier because it just seems more clear cut. That's not true. The difference is this. The difference is you're going to run into the guardrail here, and all of a sudden, it's going to be like, man, I know I shouldn't do that. I know I shouldn't do that, but man, and the difference is when you break through this guardrail, all of a sudden it becomes much, much more dangerous. And you say, well, she wants me to go upstairs. Well, I'm not going to go upstairs. This is where I draw the line. I'm not going to go upstairs. And you're getting, your guardrails are getting closer and closer to the edge. And the tension isn't different. The question is just, at what point do you want to draw the line? And what we've been working through is that if you draw the line far enough back, even if you crash into it and you go through it, you're going to be okay. But if you put that guardrail right against the edge, when you crash into it, you're not going to be okay. And for some of you, you say, you know, I'm not going to do that in my life. I'm not going to do that. And one of the things that's going to happen is that when you don't establish guardrails, it's not going to take the tension away. All it's going to do is weaken your resolve to be able to say no. All it's going to do is weaken your ability to be able to stop when you get to the edge. And so the lie is that, man, if you just do this, if you just break through here, as long as you just move your guardrail over, then you're going to be okay. You're not going to feel tension anymore. All this temptation, it's going to go away. And so the lie is, that, you know, like, you can't afford that car, but listen, just lease the car, you'll be okay, and the tension will just go away. But that's not true. All of us have experienced this. When you lease the car, you don't wake up the next day and never want to spend money again. And for some of you who are married, you're having this conversation and you're like, man, you know what? Like, I really want to have this girlfriend. I really want to date her. I know I shouldn't date her, but I really want to date her. And you know what? If I do this, the tension's going to go away. You know what the crazy thing is? When you give in to having a girlfriend on the side, the temptation to have a girlfriend on the side doesn't go away. The tension doesn't go away. It doesn't matter what it is in your life. The idea that, okay, you know what, we're, and this happens all the time. And we have a really young church here, right? And so I know that this goes through a lot of your minds. Right? Because in your relationships, man, you want to experience God, you want to experience what's right, and you want to set up these guardrails, and you're like, you know what, we'll just make out tonight, and we'll just, like, we're going to walk down this path tonight, but this is going to be the last night. I know you thought it. This is going to be the last time that this happens, but it's just, like, so hard right now, but if I give in, then it's going to be okay. And we'll fall into this idea, this trap that, you know what, if I just give in, if I just move it over, then the tension's going to go away. No, the tension will never, ever go away. The temptation will never, ever go away. The crazy thing about our appetites, the crazy thing about our urges, is that they never, ever go away. As a matter of fact, the more you feed that urge, the more you feed that appetite, the stronger it becomes. And so you say, oh, I'm going to give in here, I'm going to give in here, I'm going to give in here, but this is going to be the last time, I'm going to give in here, this is going to be the last time. And each time, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about finances or sexual intimacy or friendship. Each time you give in, the appetite will get stronger. And so what does wisdom say? Wisdom says, okay, with that being the case, knowing what I know, I'm going to back up and I'm going to draw the line where I know I can manage the appetite. I'm going to back up and I'm going to draw the line where I know I can say no. Here is where I'm going to draw the line. For some of you are sitting here and you're saying, you know, I'm not going to do the guardrails thing because I'm going to miss out. And I don't want that tension. The tension's not going to go away. You're going to get to the edge and there's going to be more tension. And God says, if you're not careful how you live your life, you're going to fall over that edge. So we say, okay, well, where do we begin to build on? The second one is, don't deceive yourself. And this is one of the things that we saw that very first week, Ephesians 5:17. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Don't deceive yourself. Because the other lie that's going to come into your life as you're walking down this path is that, you know what, God, I mean, is this really right or wrong? I mean, God's not really clear on this. And one of the things that you can fall into is that we'll begin to walk our journey and we're like, man, I don't really know if God wants me to draw this guardrail here. And we know that God wants us to put the guardrail there, right? It's not really a question in our mind. But we don't want the guardrail to be there. And so we'll begin to deceive ourselves. And what Paul is saying in this passage is, you know what the Lord's will is. Don't be foolish. You know what God's will is. Don't deceive yourself. Don't get down this journey and start saying, well, I'm not sure. And as you walk through this, you have no idea what's going to happen in your lives when you begin to say, okay, I'm not going to ask how close I can get. I'm going to ask how far I need to stay away. And we're going to begin to build these guardrails. Now, I want to tell you a story. It's a story that kind of puts this into perspective. It's actually found in the book of Daniel. And if you have your Bibles with you, you can open up to Daniel chapter 1. Sorry, I didn't mark it. Now I'm blanking out. It's after Ezekiel, not before Ezekiel. Daniel chapter 1. And in the book of Daniel, it begins to start off, and it tells us about this king named Nebuchadnezzar, and it's taking place in 605 B.C., and it's just amazing that we even know what happened in 605 B.C., but the story takes place in 605 B.C. in what would be modern-day Iraq, and Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon, and he's basically ruling this entire empire. As a matter of fact, when Saddam Hussein came to power in Iraq, he wanted to recreate what Nebuchadnezzar had built. And so a lot of his palaces and things were designed after the way that Nebuchadnezzar would have designed and built things. And in this story, we go back and we begin to be introduced to these two people. One is the king, Nebuchadnezzar, but the other is this guy named Daniel and a few of his friends. And so today, what I want us to do is I want to dive into this, and I want to kind of give you a little bit of a background of this story, because if you don't understand what's happening here at the beginning, you might miss the significance of what happens in chapter 1. Because in chapter 1, we're introduced to this idea of Nebuchadnezzar and what he's doing. And in the process, he's beginning to take over most of the known world to build his empire. And Nebuchadnezzar was an exceptionally wise person. And so we start off in verse 1. It says, during the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign in Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave him victory over King Jehoiakim of Judah and permitted him to take some of the sacred objects from the temple of God. So Nebuchadnezzar took them back to the land of Babylonia and placed them in the treasure house of his God. And so we start off the beginning of Daniel, and you see that Nebuchadnezzar comes into Judah, he conquers the land, and he begins to take things from the temple, he destroys most of Jerusalem, and he begins to bring people back. Now, Nebuchadnezzar did something over and over again with the people that he conquered that was very, very wise. You see, every single time he went into a country, every single time he conquered a new people group, what he would do is he would tell his commanders of his army, he'd say, listen, I want you to go in there, I want you to wipe them out, and then I want you to take the members of the royal family, I want you to take the best and the brightest that they have, and I want you to bring them back to Babylon. He said, I want you to go in, I want you to conquer these people, I want you to find the royal family, I want you to bring them back to Babylon. And then he would bring them back into this city, the best and the brightest, the top that this country had to offer. And he would begin to walk them through a process of giving up everything that they had learned, everything that they had known, everything that they had believed, and he would begin to indoctrinate them with the culture of Babylon. He would begin to walk them through the process of giving up their old culture to embrace this new culture. And then what he would do is once he got them to the point where they had fully bought in, then in some situations he'd actually send them back to where they came from, to be able to take this culture and spread it around the world. And so that's what we see happen at the beginning of Daniel. At the beginning of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar steps into the situation. He comes in, he conquers Judah, he goes in, he takes all of the gold, everything that's valuable from Judah, brings it back to Babylon. And with it, he brings with them the best and the brightest of the nation of Judah. And he says, okay, guys, I want you to bring these guys back. And so that's the situation in which we find Daniel. Daniel is one of these guys. He's been brought back. And for most of the people who come back, it's like a dream come true, right? Because, I mean, your nation's being attacked. Everything that you know is being destroyed. You think, okay, I'm dead. I'm done. I'm finished. There's nothing left for me. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in one of the most amazing cities surrounded by amazing people. And I mean, the king's family would have been like the most beautiful people, the ones who have been the most taken care of. And so you find yourself in this amazing situation, and then not only do they bring you into the kingdom, but they actually begin to educate you. It's basically like a master's program for these guys. And so they bring them in, and they put them into this education program, and they don't just give them any food to eat, they actually give them the food from the king's table, which means that it would have been the best food in the entire empire. And so for most of these guys, they walk in there and they think, man, this is going to be terrible. I'm dead. I'm finished. It's over. And all of a sudden, they're surrounded by incredible riches. And everything that they've ever dreamed of is beginning to come true. And all of a sudden, this dream is happening to them. And they're like, I can't believe what's happening. And it was all a part of this process of getting them to give up what they used to believe, what they used to trust in, and getting them to believe in Nebuchadnezzar. And so that's the situation in which we find Daniel. And it's an interesting story because as Daniel comes into the situation, we see him make some very interesting decisions. We'll pick it up in verse 3. It says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, pretty cool name, his chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who have been brought to Babylon as captives. Again, so the king says, okay, listen, I want you to go out there, get the young men and the people from the royal family, and I want you to bring them in. Select only the strong, healthy, and good-looking young men, he said. Make sure they are well-versed in every branch of learning, are gifted with knowledge and good judgment, and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Train these young men in the language and literature of Babylon. The king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchens. They were to be trained for 3 years, and then they would enter the royal service. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the young men chosen, all from the tribe of Judah. The chief of staff renamed them with these Babylonian names. First thing. Say, okay, at this time, names were exceptionally significant. Because names weren't chosen because you picked up a baby book at Barnes & Noble and you flipped through them and you read and you decided, man, this one sounds really good to go with our last name, and it seems to fit, and kids won't make fun of him, right? Most of you read through these and you're like, man, these kids must have gotten made fun of all the time. They didn't make the choices based on that. It meant something significant. And it meant something that had to do with what they believed. It usually had something to do with who their God was. And so the very first thing that they do when they bring Daniel into the situation is they say, okay, we're going to change your name. And so they turn to Daniel and they say, okay, Daniel was called Belshazzar, which literally means the beginning of his name actually has to do with the god Baal. So we're going to give you a new name, and it's not going to reflect your Jewish heritage. It's not going to reflect what you used to believe, but we're going to give you a name that actually honors the god Baal. His name means that Baal will protect, or Baal will watch over me. So the first thing they do is they bring these four guys in. They say, we're going to give you a new name. But Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. And this is where the story starts. You see, everything up to here has just been a little bit of background, because the author wants you to understand what's happening. He wants you to understand what Nebuchadnezzar was doing. He wants you to understand kind of the process that Nebuchadnezzar was taking these guys through. But the story begins with this verse. Because all of a sudden in Daniel's life, we see Daniel decide, okay, I'm going to build a guardrail. And the crazy thing is that this would have been exceptionally offensive. I mean, this guy has just been captured, right? He's brought back from a land that had nothing left. He's put into the king's palace to be trained and to be fed from the king's own table. And Daniel says, I don't want your food, it'll defile me. I don't know about you, but I don't imagine that conversation goes that well. Right? I mean, for those of you who are husbands, you know what it's like just to have your wife put something down on the table and you're like, I don't really like it. And it's like World War III. And so they bring this food to Daniel and these guys, and Daniel's like, you know what? Nope. And the crazy thing is that the person telling the story doesn't actually tell us why. There's a lot of ideas of why it was, and maybe this food had been offered to idols and then it was being brought to them, and so the idea was that if you ate food offered to idols, then you're actually worshiping that god. But it doesn't tell us that. Or maybe it wasn't kosher, maybe it didn't fit into the Mosaic law of what he should eat or what he shouldn't eat, but it doesn't tell us that. It doesn't tell us why. All it does is say Daniel made up his mind. You know what? This is where I draw the line. You know what? This is my guardrail. Because you see, Daniel began to see what was happening. And Daniel began to understand where this was headed. And when he came in, we know a lot about the culture, and so we know that there are a lot of different things that happened to Daniel. They shaved his head, they pierced his ear, they changed his name. And all these things are happening, and they're beginning to take everything from Daniel and walk him down this path. And Daniel says, okay, listen, this is where I draw the line. Okay, you can shave my head, you can pierce my ear, you can change my name. But this is my guardrail. It says, but Daniel was determined, and another translation says, Daniel made up his mind not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. He asked the chief of staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. Again, had to have been an awkward conversation. At this point, Daniel must have thought, I'm going to die. And he really should have thought that. Because when Daniel laid down that guardrail, there was a really high chance that his life was over. And so he goes in and says, I'm not going to eat these unacceptable foods. And then we get to the crucial verse, and this is the one I want you to grab hold of today. In verse 9, it starts off, it says, now God. And here's the thing that you're going to forget as you begin to walk down your journey. Here's the thing that you're going to forget when it comes to this idea of guardrails. Here's the thing that often doesn't come into our equation when we think about these guardrails. Now, God. You see, Daniel understood that guardrails weren't just put in place to protect us, but that guardrails were actually put in place to direct us. And you're not going to know how he's working, and you're not going to know where he's working. But make no mistake, he is working. And Daniel made this decision. Daniel didn't make this decision because he knew how the story was going to end. He hadn't read the book of Daniel. He's like, man, you know what? This is going to work out really well for me. I'm going to make this decision right now. He didn't make the decision knowing how the story's going to end. But Daniel made the decision realizing that, you know what, if I don't make this decision, I bet I can predict how the story will end. And Daniel understood something that we often forget, and that is this: that God is always working. And you may not be able to see it at all, but when you say, okay, this is where I draw the line, this is my guardrail, God's not just going to use that to protect you. God's actually going to use that to direct you. And so Daniel stands up and says, we're not going to eat these foods. Now God had given the chief of staff both respect and affection for Daniel. But he responded, I'm afraid of the Lord my king, who has ordered that you eat this food and wine. If you become pale and thin compared to your youth, to other youths your age, I'm afraid the king will have me beheaded. So Daniel goes to them and says, listen, I can't do this. I can't defile my body this way. This is where I draw the line. The guy's like, listen, I can't give you permission to do that. If I give you permission to do that and you turn out pale and you start to lose weight, it's not going to be your head that's lost. It's my head that's lost. And at this point in the conversation, Daniel's got to be thinking, well, it's probably going to be my head that's lost then. Because Daniel's like, no, I'm not backing down. But God's working, right? I'm afraid the king will have me beheaded. Daniel spoke with the attendant who had been appointed by the chief of staff to look after Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water, Daniel said. At the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. The attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. And we don't know how this worked out. It doesn't tell us. All we know is that he goes to the guy in charge and says, listen, I'm not going to do this. And the guy's like, listen, I can't give you permission to do that, but it looks like there's kind of like this little wink-wink system where he's like, go talk to him, maybe he'll let you do it, right? And so Daniel goes to the other guy who kind of oversees the attendant, who oversees them directly, and says, listen, I'm really not going to be able to do this. Just test us for 10 days. And for me, when I read this passage, I was like, wow, this is the hardest part of the whole journey, right? Because the hard part wasn't saying I'm not going to eat it. The hard part is I'm just going to eat water and vegetables. Seriously. That would kill me. And he says, listen, I just want you to test me for 10 days. And what Daniel doesn't know is that behind the scenes, God had already given favor to those who were overseeing him. And that as Daniel was making this decision, as Daniel was taking this step, God was beginning to put him on a path that he could not possibly have imagined. And the end of Daniel's story, and you guys, if you get home, you can dive into this book and read through it and read through this story. It's amazing. It changes the history of the nation of Israel. It changes the history of Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar. His entire story changes. Why? Because Daniel said, okay, this is where I draw the line. And most of us would look at Daniel and say, you know what, Daniel, that's ridiculous. You don't need to draw the line there. I'll bet you he had conversations with tons of the other guys who came with him who said, you know what, that's ridiculous. You don't need to draw the line there. And Daniel said, you know you know what? You might be right. But this is where I draw the line. And God takes that and he begins to direct Daniel. And even as you read through the next few verses, you see that already God is using this to take Daniel places he never would have dreamed of. Verse 17, God gave these four young men an unusual aptitude for understanding every aspect of literature and wisdom, and God gave Daniel the special ability to interpret the meanings of visions and dreams. When the training period ordered by the king was completed, the chief of staff brought all the young men to King Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and no one impressed him as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the royal service. Whenever the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them to be 10 times more capable than any of the magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. You know where it started? Daniel decided, okay, I'm going to build a guardrail. And he experienced something that probably a lot of us here have experienced. If you've been on this journey for any amount of time, I'll bet you that you've experienced the same as me. Is that when you begin to say yes to God, when you begin to look at this journey that you're on and stop asking how close can I get to the edge, but start asking, okay, how can I make sure that I'm making the most of all my days? How can I make sure that I'm following my God, make sure that I'm experiencing him? All of a sudden, God will begin to direct you in ways that you couldn't possibly have imagined. And the times that I've experienced God directing me the most haven't been the times when I was on my knees praying, God, please show me what to do. God, please show me where you want me to go. That's not the times when I've experienced God directing me the most. It's usually been the times in my life where I've stood up and said, you know what, this is where I'm going to draw the line. And you have no idea how it's going to play out. And whether it be in your personal life, whether it be in your finances, whether it be with your friends, the truth is you have no idea what the end of the story will be. But for most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, we can probably predict what it's going to be if we don't establish guardrails. And what we learn from the story of Daniel is that when you put this in place, God will not just use it to protect you, but he'll begin to use it to direct you. And what we read about in Ephesians a couple of weeks ago will become very, very true in your life. And you will begin to make the most of every single day. You see, this entire journey is based on the fact that you have the opportunity to be adopted as the son or the daughter of God. And what he wants for you is so much more than what you want for yourself. And so he's saying, listen, there are some areas of your life where there's danger, and you have to build guardrails. And for some of you, you're here, and you're like, man, I don't know what God's will is for my life. I have this conversation with people a lot, and especially for those of you who are maybe still in school or just out of school, and you're kind of asking this question, you know, I don't know what God's will is. I don't know what God's will is. I don't know what God's will is. If there's anything that we learn from the story of Daniel, it's that when you begin to stop deceiving yourself, and you begin to do what you know God's will to be, and you begin to live out what you know today God's will is, what you know he wants you to do today, all of a sudden he begins to inform the things that are still a mystery. All of a sudden he begins to work behind the scenes, and things begin to fall in place, and the journey begins to flow right out in front of you. And for some of you, you're really, really frustrated with God because you want him to tell you the end of the story. But you know what? God doesn't do that. You know why he doesn't do that? Because it's not good for you. There's another story in God's word. It's the story of a man named Jacob. And in Jacob's life, God comes to Jacob's mom, and she tells her the end of the story. He comes to Jacob's mom, and he says, listen, your son Jacob, he's going to be the one who receives the blessing. He's going to be the one that I work through. He's going to be the one that I lift up. He tells her the end of the story. Exactly what most of you are praying for. And so you know what she does? She begins to make it happen. And she lies, and she deceives, and she destroys her family to make that happen. And what God realizes is that if he tells you the end of the story, you're not going to depend on him to get there. You're going to try to get there yourself. And it's going to rob you of this journey with him. And it's going to rob you of this relationship that you have with him. And so on this journey, he says, listen, I'm going to walk you through this. I want you to trust me with where you're going to go. And I'm going to give you these principles, and I'm going to give you these guidelines, and you need to begin to establish these guardrails. You need to draw these lines in the sand. And when you begin to do that, all of a sudden, your life is going to begin to take twists and turns that you never, ever expected. And you're going to find yourself in a place you could have only dreamed of. Today, as you look at this idea of guardrails and as you go throughout this next year, maybe you're sitting here saying, you know what, I don't know, I don't want to miss out. Believe me, if you don't establish guardrails, you will miss out. You may experience that extra couple feet of road. But when you go over that edge, you're going to miss out on that entire journey that God had in store for you. And in this story, if Daniel doesn't say, you know what, this is where I draw the line, there is no book of Daniel. And everything that happens from that point on in this story is built on one thing. His decision to draw the line. And as we've walked through this series, as I've said over and over and over again, this is a personal standard of behavior that you need to establish. And I don't know if it's in your marriage. I don't know if it's in your relationship. I don't know if it's in your finances. But you need to draw the line. Stop playing around with it. And make up your mind, okay, from this day forward, this is where I draw the line. And begin to allow God to direct you and protect you towards the life you've always dreamed. Will you pray with me? Father, this morning as we walk through this story of Daniel, it's amazing to see how you use this one simple decision to guide his entire life. How you use this one decision to impact not only him, but to impact these two kingdoms in the direction of so many of those around him. And Father, today as we sit here and as we look at the guardrails that you've begun to work in our lives and you've begun to bring up and the things that you've begun to tell us you want us to do and you've begun to communicate that you want us to establish. Father, I pray that today we draw that line in the sand. I pray that today we would make up our mind. I pray that we would resolve today to follow you. that we'd realize that where you're taking us is so much greater than that extra 3 feet on the side of the road. And the life for which you have created us is so much bigger than anything we may miss out on along the way. In Jesus' name, amen.